The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Stephen Pearl enters year two as the head man on the Plains, and he might just have the toughest road scheduled in the SEC. It's Thursday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. I'm Kristen Griffin here with you in the studio on this June 25th, and a summer feeling. It is hot in the Auburn Opelika area. Again, if that's the biggest complaint, there's no rain, and so you'll take the complaints where you can get them. But if you want to turn it down like 20, 25 degrees, I mean, I wouldn't really mind that if you wanted to make that the overall deal. But happy Thursday, everybody. Hopefully those that were interested in any sort of Ella Langley tickets, hopefully that was a success, because on our ends, it was not a great success. And so hopefully everybody was able to get that worked out on their end. And so a very, very happy Thursday. A lot to dive into here this afternoon. I welcome in my man Tripp Upton sitting across from me in the studio. Happy Thursday, my man. Hope all is well in your world.
Yes, happy Thursday. It's been a chill day. Just the weather is fantastic outside today, as you said. I know you said to turn it down a little bit. I personally like it around this, maybe 5 degrees colder. But you know, it was a great Wednesday night, great Thursday morning here at the Auburn Network Studios in the ESPN 106.7 studios, and ready to talk some sports because we've got a lot to cover. I did not look for Ella Langley tickets. I knew my odds were not
Jacob
be great.
Jacob was taking all of them.
I heard. No, I mean, I know. I have it on some reliable sources, some trusty bro sources, that there are some people that he reached out to saying, hey, I know you get access to the presale.
Yeah.
Let me know.
I also have sources, a.k.a. sources of trust me, bro, coming from the scream that I heard upstairs. It did not go the way that he was hoping. So,
oh my gosh! Of course,
I can't confirm or deny, but sources are telling me that there was not luck on
there this. Was some high pitched wailing and crying, from what I understand.
Yeah, I think it tried to go into the pillow, but it didn't make it. Instead, it just shot right downstairs while I was on the phone with Doug Amos at the Max Roundtable.
Oh, my goodness.
No, all jokes aside. But hopefully there was some out there that got some tickets. Again, a really cool event that's happening August 28th and 29th inside of Neville Arena, making her homecoming to Auburn University is really, really cool. And so excited to hear more about that in the coming days. Are you somebody, based off of you saying it's a perfect day, are you somebody that there's always the question, would you rather be very hot or very cold? What do you feel in that?
I'd rather be very hot, because I understand the logic of the if you're cold, put on more layers.
Sure.
I do understand that, but there's just something where it's, you know, it's nice and 85. You're rolling through the back roads or the streets of downtown Auburn, and you've got the windows down, the air's blowing, you've got on the line from 2 to 4 blaring through your car speakers and or any of our other great channels of the Auburn Network.
I was gonna say, hopefully you're not driving with the windows down from 2 to 4.
Yeah, that would be really weird. I do sometimes from 4 to 6, let's catch a little bit of the drive,
sure.
Maybe switch over to Wings or W. Lee as well when they go to commercial break.
Well done.
But no, yeah, I'm a warm weather person. I grew up in Georgia with, just like you did, and so we're used to it a little bit more than our friends from the north are, because I know people that are, yeah, if it's anything above 70, it's too hot. I'm just like that. That's, you know, anything below 70 is like hoodie weather almost.
Yeah. I don't know. I debate it. I think I'd rather be very hot than very cold, because I can't function when my body gets really cold. That being said, yeah. if I could be very picky and throw a sub bullet point, I would rather be slightly cold than slightly warm, because being slightly warm is the most miserable thing in the world.
Yeah, no, I think that's also very true, especially like when you're trying to sleep.
Yes.
I need it to be freezing cold and just, you know, just pass out, hit the fortress of dreams.
Yeah. Well, speaking of some of the hottest topics right now, we got Auburn basketball talk yesterday for the first time in quite some time, and we have more of it here this afternoon. And if you want to be a part of today's program, the phone lines are open for the first 30 minutes of each hour, so from 2 to 2:30 and then 3 to 3:30. We do have our wonderful guests here joining us at 2:30, Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, and then Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, at 3:30. Also, some news that we have a confirmed guest for hour number one and a confirmed guest for hour number two tomorrow. And so we'll be able to give you a little bit more insight onto that. But it involves the hottest thing in sports in Auburn right now, if that gives any sort of tease for a guest that has more knowledge than we do on that topic. And so excited for tomorrow's show, but excited for today's show. And again, if you want to be a part of it, phone lines are open for the first 30 minutes of every single hour. 334-321-1390. Give us a call. Give us your thoughts on everything we're about to discuss, anything that's on your mind within the sports world. We are happy to dive into it here this afternoon. Text box is always open as well at 334-784-1685. Again, 334-784-1OTL. Highly advise anybody that has any sort of questions to send those questions there here today and throughout all of summer, because funny enough, we got a text, and it's from our president, Mr. President Eric, a couple of days ago, actually last Friday, talking about if we had 3 years to, as a head coach, 3 years to build a championship roster, to build a championship-style team, how would we do it? And funny enough, that is what hour number two tomorrow is going to look like. I won't tease this one. We have Jack Hudden coming into the studio, so it'll be the three of us discussing all of the different ways to build a program in 3 years, and then what which way that we would choose to go about it, as Auburn has seen multiple different types of ways over the last handful of years, for better or for worse. Well, we're very polished in knowing that there are multiple different ways to try and build a team in the NIL era. And so, again, a fantastic question that we will be able to discuss. So if there's anything like that, any conversational points that you have, again, send those our way at 334-784-1OTL. But we start with news on the hardwood for Auburn basketball and Stephen Pearl, Tahad Pettiford, Kevin Overton, Simon Walker, and the giant list of the transfers and Caleb Williams, apologies, the freshman, as well as we don't know the dates or the times quite yet, but the SEC has released its full SEC slate, and Auburn basketball, I don't think it's a surprise. I think every host at every single SEC site or wherever could talk about the gauntlet that SEC basketball has become regardless. Yet when you look at the road slate for the Auburn Tigers, I think that is what stands out more than anything else. It is an absolute gauntlet. A lot of it is going to be based off of when and where these games are scheduled in terms of back-to-backs, or do you have a relatively easier home game before a couple of difficult road games? Because when you're looking at this, just in terms of the logos that have been announced, it feels like there's excitement, yes, but holy cow, the places you have to go on the road, not only some of the best environments, but the best teams you're going to play in the SEC.
Yeah, that is a very interesting decision to make Auburn go on the road. I mean, it's the SEC's decision, but looking at their road schedule, they'll go to Fayetteville, Arkansas, Lexington, Kentucky, Columbia, South Carolina, College Station, Texas, Austin, Texas, and Nashville, Tennessee, in the that arena at Vanderbilt that Auburn is just it's kind of what Alabama was in Jordan-Hare Stadium. I've seen it compared to what it was basically before 2020, saying that like Auburn rarely goes to Vanderbilt and just some weird voodoo magic.
Yeah,
gives Vanderbilt that edge right there. They'll also go on the road to Tuscaloosa, Baton Rouge, and Oxford, Mississippi. All of those teams will also play at Auburn. Those are the three home and away matchups for the Tigers.
Yeah, and so again, Arkansas, Kentucky, South Carolina, Texas A&M, Texas, and Vanderbilt is the road schedule for the Auburn Tigers. You're talking about what John Calipari is doing at Arkansas. It's going to be one of the most talented teams in the SEC. Mark Pope with Kentucky, although didn't have the transfer portal that a lot of the Cats fans were hoping for. And we'll get our buddy Lance Daw here in the studio before too long as well to be able to dive into what he is expecting from the Kentucky Wildcats. But being able to get Milan from Iowa State is obviously one of the biggest pickups of the entire transfer portal season for any team in college basketball. South Carolina has been a tough place to play for the Auburn Tigers as of late. When you're looking at just the type of environment, if you hit that desperation point, and especially because of as of late, when they go and visit South Carolina, they usually have a pretty high number next to their name. And so that obviously brings out a little bit of that desperation, obviously brings out the fan base as well. It's not Williams-Brice, but not even probably comparable, but still a very tough, can be tough road environment. That will be the one, though, that you circle as, by no means am I using the word easy. I'm not even going to use the words easy with quotation marks, but that is at least somewhat of a deep breath of going on the road, because the other five, you're going to Buckyball in year two at Texas A&M after they came to Auburn and were down by 18 and pulled off the upset because Keyshawn Murphy's fingertips and middle fingernail is just a little bit too long. We do have Keyshawn Murphy news that we'll get to a little bit as well. But Texas A&M pulling off the upset inside Neville Arena. You then go to Texas with Sean Miller and everybody knows what Texas has done. This will be another talking point that we get to later on in the summer. But we looked at, I saw a statistic that was showing the top five, the big three sports, and then women's basketball and softball since, I forgot exactly what year it was, but Texas led almost the entire country in wins in those at like 70%. And basketball was almost one of the things that held them back. I think Sean Miller has changed that with the run that they had and then being able to get a lot of talented guys from the portal, also our Elijah Freeman. And so Texas will not be a fun place to go to. And then you talk about transfers that left Auburn, Sebastian Williams-Adams, with arguably the best, I don't even know if it's arguably anymore, him and Tahad Pettiford with Tyler Tanner are the best point guards in the Southeastern Conference. And so going to that place, going to Vanderbilt, a very interesting, a very weird arena, again, with the floor placed above the benches, and the benches are underneath the baskets. So when you're trying to coach on the other side of the floor, you're having to scream the entire length of the floor. And so, yes, Arkansas, Kentucky, South Carolina, Texas A&M, Texas, and Vanderbilt. And then you mentioned the home and away, I guess the home and home, if you will, a little bit easier for the buzzwords. Alabama, that one's the obvious one. Ole Miss has become one that's been popular as of late, going to the Pavilion and then them coming to Neville Arena. That Ole Miss team is going to be very interesting. And then LSU, a home and home with Will Wade back in Baton Rouge. The LSU team has a whole lot of question marks going on right now with their program just because of the 5-for-5 that was just implemented. And Will Wade just being Will Wade, a really good basketball coach, not necessarily the most respected as a an individual, but knows how to put his team in the right position. You saw it at NC State even just in year one. You saw it at McNeese, and you saw it with LSU in years previous. And so he is back inside Baton Rouge, and the last time that he made his way in an LSU in the purple and gold, I believe, was the Javon McCormick buzzer beater. I believe that was the case. I was actually playing, I believe, in a fall baseball game and still managed to keep stats and updates on my phone. But I believe that was the Javon McCormick buzzer beater after LSU missed a free throw, drove down, and they reviewed it for like 5 minutes to see if it was offensive goaltending. I believe that's the game. I know that happened. I don't know if that. I believe that was the last game that Will Wade coached inside Neville Arena. But again, the LSU team in the future is obviously supposed to be very, very impactful. And so, yeah, you will see all nine of those teams on the road. You will see those three at home. And then I think there's a little bit of excitement. The excitement continues to build with Auburn's home schedule as well.
Yes. Looking at this home schedule, you play Florida, a team that I think is the, with Dusty May leaving for the NBA, has easily the national championship frontrunner. They probably already were coming into that decision. I think it was 1A, 1B between Florida and Michigan. Georgia, a team that has been hot recently under Mike White, but always underperforms in March, and we will see if that dog squad can build back despite losing a ton of talent. Missouri, a Mississippi State team, another team that's it's never a tough out. You saw it last year on the road in Starkville. Auburn lost that game, but then defeated the Bulldogs in the SEC tournament. Oklahoma and Tennessee, who has been kind of your measuring stick program with Auburn as of late, with a very unique style of play. But looking at this home slate, given the away games that you're having to go to Fayetteville, Kentucky, College Station, Austin, and then your two easier games are Nashville and Columbia, which are not crazy easy games. Thinking at what we said yesterday or a couple of days ago about Stephen Pearl needing to make the tournament, needing to make some noise, how well do you think they have to do in these home games to be able to make that happen? Looking at it before they have dates and times, because again, a Saturday night game in Neville Arena is way different than a Thursday or a Wednesday game inside the jungle. Like, what do you think looking at this just at point blank range?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at just the home games, not including the home and home, but just the six games you mentioned of Florida, Georgia, Missouri, State, OU, and Tennessee, I think 4-2 needs to be mandatory if you're asking me to put a number on it, with wins over Georgia, Missouri, OU, and Mississippi State. I think those need to be your wins that you have to have, and then you're going to toss up Florida and Tennessee. If you can get one of those, great. If you get both of them, even better. I don't think you put yourself in the best spot if you lose both of them, because then you go back and you look at the home and home of Ole Miss, who I think you need to beat. LSU is such a question mark. I have no idea what that team is going to look like, but being at home, I put that as a win. And then Alabama, I think that puts it at a split as well, to where, okay, if you win all three of those home and homes, and then you win four, you go 4-2, that's 7-2 in your home games. I think that makes it respectable to where you go on the road where you're going to be the underdog in a majority of these games, but based off of what you do at home and based off of what you do in the non-conference play, the non-conference slate as well, I think will build more and more legitimacy to what the expectations are, what the talent level of this team is, because I think in non-con play, that was when the expectations changed a little bit, right? I mean, going into it, when we talked about it on this show, there was a lot of excitement, but there were so many question marks of this team could look like. The athleticism, the length is there, just in terms of what we thought was going to be a very fast-paced, a very high-octane, high-energy offense. Injuries and then certain players not fulfilling their potential obviously made it to where this coaching staff and Stephen Pearl had to change their game plan, and you saw that immediately, but then you saw it even more when you played the teams like Arizona, and you went and you even just some of the easier non-conference games that were supposed to be relatively sweat-free, it was, okay, everybody's sitting on the edge of their seats inside Neville Arena. And so I think the talent level, the expectations obviously alter a little bit, but just looking at this talented team and looking at the size that they have, the mobility that they have, and the ability to create mismatches offensively and defensively, both in favor of the Auburn Tigers, I think it makes it to where this year, more than any, if Stephen Pearl and this Auburn team wants to take a big step up, which I think the expectation is for them to obviously do so, easier said than done, but it's obviously planted at home inside Neville Arena.
Right. You know, again, looking at that non-conference last year, I think, yes, the expectation changed, but I think looking back, once you got to see the full body of work where Michigan won the national title, Arizona was a Final Four, or at least an elite team. And then, you know, like teams, like even like a win, like St. John's, they were good. That was the Big East champs. Mm-hmm. That was such, you know, granted, you can only take the data points at the time, but then looking back, it's like, okay, they were good. Houston was really good. It's those kind of things that that's why Auburn looked a little bit better coming out of the season than in the moment of looking at kind of how those wins and losses impacted them. But no, looking at this kind of what we said, kind of what the expectation is, I think I agree with you. 4-2 is a benchmark and a bare minimum. You'd love to steal. I think they will, and you'd like to see it, especially with the expectations we have for this team. Steal one of the two against Florida and Tennessee. You know, if you are able to go 5-1 and only lose to Florida at home, that's understandable. Looking at on the road, kind of the same thing, 2-4 at kind of minimum. I know saying going to Columbia and Vanderbilt are not a gimme games, but if you could do that, maybe steal a Kentucky or an Arkansas or an A&M, great as well. But then the home and home, you've got to be able to compete in those as well, because those are going to be the ones where a loss doesn't completely damage your resume, but two wins can 100% bolster you. If it's like, man, we beat Alabama twice. Mm-hmm. We beat an LSU team that's competing for the tournament twice. We beat Ole Miss twice. We handled the business that we were supposed to. That would be fantastic. But kind of being able to split those, that puts you right around, if you can sweep Ole Miss, which I think this Auburn team is capable of, again, got to look at rosters, got to look at dates. Then you're looking, staring down the barrel of like a 10-8 in the SEC, a 9-9 in the SEC. That would put you on pace of what you were last year a little bit higher if you then, again, play a tough schedule in the non-com while it's still being finalized, obviously. But looking with that body of work, there's a big possibility that the Auburn Tigers' floor, if we're expecting everything to break even, could be an NCAA tournament appearance.
Yeah, still so much conversation that will be built from this. When we get the dates, when we get the times, we'll be able to pocket these games up into what needs to happen in these six games, what needs to happen in these six games, and then the final six games as well. Makes it for a fun conversation. We'll be able to hit on that a little bit more throughout the week, throughout the summer as well, but how nice is it and how hopeful are we to not have to be dominated by basketball conversations in October, because you feel like that's been the turning of the tape over the last couple of years. But we'll be able to dive into that as well as the other teams in the SEC, a deep dive into those teams as well as the weeks go on. But we will take a break. We'll come back as there is news with a player in terms of Auburn basketball who's making his way from overseas that was drafted in the second round last night, and what that means for the Auburn Tigers this season, and how there's not too many fans that are happy about it from the other side of the states. We'll talk about that as we're just underway here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island, January 1848. At a sawmill in Northern California, a carpenter named James Marshall noticed something shining in the water, gold. News spread slowly at first, then all at once. Within months, thousands of hopeful prospectors poured into California. They came by wagon, by ship, and even on foot. They were called the 49ers. Boomtown sprang up overnight. Some struck it rich, most did not. But the rush transformed California and accelerated America's expansion westward. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948, online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
I officially made myself angry, because over the break I did go back and confirm that. Did you say Will Wade did coach LSU in 2022?
Yes, it was the 2021-22 season. He got fired after the SEC tournament due to the notice of allegations that it was already, the team was trending downward at the time.
Sure.
They used the allegations to not have to pay a buyout.
And did Auburn won that game, didn't they?
Auburn won that game by 20.
Yeah, because that was after the Sharif year, but I made myself mad going back and looking at the 2019-2020 season, finding which one was the Javon McCormick year, and it was. It was February 8th, Letterman's weekend, where the 11th-ranked Tigers took on the 18th-ranked LSU Tigers, and Auburn won 91-90 in overtime. They followed that up with a 95-91 win in Auburn against Alabama. And so, gosh, that year was so up and down. We lost to Missouri by 8. We lost to Georgia by 10 in Athens, and then went to Knoxville and won. Or no, we hosted Tennessee that year, and a very up and down year. But then beat Kentucky at the end of the season in Knoxville. Like, yeah, it was 85-63. Team was good enough to win it all, man. 25-6, 16-1 on the or at home. Went 12-6 in conference play. I got to click out of that. I'm going to make myself cry, make myself angry. But while we do have just a moment or two, did want to dive into Francis Ngoy, because the National Defensive Player of the Year in France, the not Division II, but the League II that he played in, again, one Defensive Player of the Year, has signed with the Auburn Tigers. And news broke last night that, well, the Los Angeles Clippers said, you know what, we'll take a risk. We'll go and draft this guy. And he did, or they did. They drafted Narcis Ngoy. And there was a little bit of panic just in terms of what that means for Stephen Pearl, what that means for Narcis. And you basically realized that, I believe they call it like the stash in play, and essentially the Los Angeles Clippers just drafted the rights for Narcis Ngoy when he decides to turn pro. There was a comment last night from Ngoy that says, I am thankful for the LA Clippers and their confidence in me. I fully intend to Auburn or to honor my commitment to Auburn University, and I am looking forward to wearing the Auburn Tigers jersey for the 2026-2027 season. And so hopefully a little bit of a deep breath on that side of things, but we don't have time because the music's going to kick us out, and Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network is going to join us. But from the Auburn perspective, it's awesome. But from the college sports perspective, it's like, I didn't even know that this was even a rule.
Right. So because he was 22 before the next season began, he was automatically made eligible because of the draft. Effectively, the Clippers, when he turns pro next year or even later, if he decides to, he will go to the Clippers. He can't sign with any other team in free agency or be drafted by any other team, even if he's the best player in America. He is a Los Angeles Clipper, so it does not affect Auburn. If anything, it affects the Los Angeles Clippers.
It's so wild for me to think about the idea of, like, all right, Mike Trout, you're a first-round draft pick, but go play at Cal Poly for 3 years. But when you decide to go pro, yeah, you're already in Anaheim.
It's what Larry Bird did.
It's a wild topic. We'll see what Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network thinks. He joins us when we come back.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Minutes into the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, and again, with it being 2:30, with it being Thursday, you know what that means. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joining us on the phone lines. And Brad, it was raining the entire time you were at the beach, and so I feel like you brought the warm weather to Auburn. And I guess if that's the biggest complaint, then so be it. But gosh, you brought the heat with you to Auburn, Alabama.
Well, it's funny you mention that. So we were at the beach 2 weeks ago, right? So we were there before the rain moved.
Okay, in. That's right.
We had picture-perfect beach weather. We have been up in Clay County today at one of ESPN 106.7's sister stations, part of the Radio Alabama family, participating in a cornhole lunch and golf outing. And I got to tell you, I was a little leery of it when I thought about playing golf in late June in Alabama, but it threatened to rain the whole time. It's amazing how different things can be just an hour away.
How did you get on the golf course? Did you play well, or did you at least beat a couple people in cornhole?
Well, our team won. So our team won the golf outing. We shot even par in a best ball situation.
Okay.
And you know what? I hit enough good shots to make me not, like, despise it and want to do it again sometime.
If that's the biggest complaint about going to the golf course, then then it feels like that's a fantastic problem to have. When you hit it straight and it doesn't go exactly where you want, we're not good enough to complain about that.
Yeah. No, that's it. And I hit about four or five that were straight and not just worm burners.
Well, so,
good enough.
Yes, sir. Well, we appreciate you for taking some time to join us here again this afternoon. We know that it's a little bit more of the talking season side of things, especially with the dead period for football dying down. But Alex Golish and the recruiting trail has done anything but die down. And we'll dive into that in just a moment. But the hottest news in terms of Auburn athletics is Auburn basketball, with their SEC schedule and the entire SEC schedule being announced. And before diving into that, just want to ask more of the generic question of being able to now look at this roster as a whole, with Tahad Pettiford, with Kevin Overton, with Simon Walker returning to the Auburn Tigers, and then the plethora of transfers, Caleb Williams, the one high school recruit in there as well. What is it that excites you about the possibility of this team inside Neville Arena in 2026 and 2027?
I think it's addressing the needs that were not met last year, the deficiencies last year. You know, deficiencies in a season turn into needs in an off season, and they address those. They've added much more height, much more size, length, girth on the inside. They've added size on the perimeter and shooting ability around the perimeter, so teams maybe can just focus in on Tahad and KO shooting from long range. You've added some rebounding attitude and prowess as well. Just the overall size and length that was missing from last year's team. I think you've got that. And I think you've got, you know, that makes it so much easier to close out defensively, so much tougher for other teams to see through passing lanes, and just a lot of really micro elements that make winning basketball easier. And this, you know, this staff has done that. They've gone and they've added those things, and I'm excited to see the product they put out on the floor against another challenging schedule, both non-conference and in-conference.
Yeah, non-conference, in-conference, and then home and away as well. As we don't have the official dates or the times, but we do have all of Auburn's home, away, and their home and home sets for this upcoming year. But you hit on a really good point, and just the ability to attack the needs, and how nice is it now when you look at this Auburn team and it feels like they can almost be the ones to create those mismatches, whether that's offensively and they want to go a little bit of a bigger lineup, or they want to go a little bit of a smaller lineup, which, funny enough, that's George Kimball and Kevin Overton at 6'2 and 6'5, but the ability to go to that if you want to, and make it to where you've seen this SEC and the league rely so much on the trees and the physicality in the paint. You don't feel like Auburn is at a spot where they're going to lose any of those battles, and it feels like that's a very good feeling to have.
Yeah, and teams can't just focus in solely on stopping Tahad or KO, and because you brought some more, you know, you brought some height in Creighton transfers and Troy transfers that can play around the perimeter a little bit, so you've added a little extra size there as well, and some shooting ability, which opens things up on the inside, opens up driving lanes too for Tahad and KO, and plus just the normal maturity level. My favorite thing about this team is last year, because of the timing of the coaching change, it felt a little bit like you'd gone skydiving and you weren't sure when you were going to, you know, jump out of the plane. And then you do, and you're kind of scrambling and, you know, can you figure it out at the end? And they did. And they, you know, they pulled the parachute and they landed fine. You know, they won the NIT championship. KO said, we'll take it, when he was asked about it at the end. But now there's no uncertainty. And not just no uncertainty, but there is full certainty over who the staff is and what the roles are and what's expected of the players and coaching personnel and everybody. So I just think that stability, along with enhanced size on the roster, are really good things.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. And Brad, looking at some of these games for the 2026-2027 in the SEC, a lot of focus has gone to the road games. They travel to Arkansas, Kentucky, South Carolina, Texas A&M, Texas and Vanderbilt. Those are some tough road games. Every road game is tough in the SEC, but what are one or two that you're circling for Auburn to potentially make some noise on the road?
Yeah, Auburn's going to be looking to, that game at Texas A&M is big. They're all big, like you said. But, the games at Vanderbilt and Texas A&M, I think, are really pivotal games. You can throw Texas in there as well, on top of what are always important games in Kentucky and Arkansas. So those teams aren't getting worse. Those teams aren't spending any less on their rosters. I don't know. I'm trying to adopt the same philosophy that we did when we talked about kickoff times for football, and that is it just doesn't matter. And if you get caught up too much on who you play and who you don't play, and, man, we have to play this team on the road versus we get to play this next game,
sure,
period, and it doesn't matter who it's against or where it is or what time or what TV network or whatever, man, just go play the game. And go play your very best. Prepare well, play well, and have success regardless of the name on the other jersey.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here joining us as he does every single Thursday at 2:30 here on ESPN 106.7. A lot of excitement for what's about to happen on the hardwood, but we hope that that excitement is delayed for just a little bit longer as Auburn football continues to near down the stretch. SEC Media Days right on the horizon as well, which you feel like is the official start of football season, and excited to be able to bring our coverage from Tampa there here this year as well. But my goodness, when you look at what Alex Golish and this team and this staff continue to bring out guys and get their commitments with the Auburn logo, just about a top 10 class, a top 12 class, regardless of where you look. And it feels like every single time we talk to you, there's new names to discuss, but just as a whole, what does the excitement look like for this Alex Golish and this recruiting staff in terms of, again, like we have discussed multiple times, this is all before AG has even coached a game inside Jordan-Hare Stadium?
Yeah, we're at June 25th. They're averaging a commitment every other day so far.
Is that good?
In the month. That's wild for June. They're selling a vision. They're selling an opportunity. Auburn doesn't take a backseat to anybody in the country in anything. I mean, in facilities, that the Walto Center is amazing. They don't take a backseat in campus experience, student life, what it is to be a student at Auburn. And they don't take a backseat to anybody in game day atmosphere or development for the next level or career development outside of football. And they don't take a backseat to anybody in NIL opportunities either. And so you have a coaching staff that is super authentic, super straightforward. They're not sugarcoating anything. And that's what these guys want at the end of the day. You know, the balloons are great and the light up signs and the Instagram pictures and everything are great. But when you sit a kid down in a room to close the deal and you say, look, this is the hardest thing that you're ever going to do in your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, whoa. All right, most coaches aren't saying stuff like that.
Sure.
And then AG follows it up with, but we're going to win. Well, he's done it everywhere he's been, so it would make sense that he's going to do it at Auburn. And that's the message that's being promoted to the recruits, and they are clearly in line with it.
And really excited to see what happens this season. And in hour number two, Brad, we're diving into some of the top transfers in the SEC that ESPN released the article for. And Byron Brown and Cole Best, guys like that, are obviously on this list, and obviously other teams in the SEC as well. But it's not often and not talked about enough the idea of almost a transfer offense, if you will, with the amount of guys that are coming with Alex Golish and this offense. You're not having to learn a new system. It's not simply a plug-and-play type of quarterback or the one-year rental at some other type of school. How could this be such a benefit for the Auburn Tigers and something that just doesn't seem to get talked about enough?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. I think it's a benefit because they know the system. They know what to expect. And when we talk about that, we're not just talking about game day Saturdays. We're talking about what to expect at the training table in June, in the weight room and in preseason practices, the temperament, the culture, the mentality, all of that. And then, oh, by the way, yeah, the checks at the line of scrimmage and how you're going to attack a particular defense. But you can't just do a carbon copy of what was done at USF, which is what I really love about the staff and their approach, is because they also have extensive SEC experience, winning SEC experience. They know you can't do the same thing that you did at the old place, at the new place, and have success. Defenses are different, a lot of film, a lot of smart coaches. So their ability to adapt, but to adapt as a cohesive unit as opposed to individual pieces has to be helpful. It's better than the alternative, in my opinion.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the phone lines. And, Brad, we appreciate your time, as always. I know, as you mentioned, a very, very busy afternoon, and so we're greatly grateful of your time here this afternoon. I know that, again, with the offseason, the Auburn Sports Network down period just a little bit. We know that the Talking Tigers podcast is still rolling with Andy Bertram, who was just able to be recognized with his Hall of Fame induction into the Alabama Broadcasters Association. And so, again, credit to him. Congratulations to him. And I know they're going to continue rolling on that throughout the summer. But plug all of your news. Plug anything that you got individually working on throughout the summer that people need to check out.
Sure. We'd invite people to go to YouTube and look up The Barn Auburn on YouTube. We do a show every day with Zach Blackerby called Village Vice. We do a live show on Fridays. And a lot of, you know, the archive shows are there for you to go back. Just check out The Barn Auburn on YouTube or wherever you get audio podcasts, and check that out. And yep, it'll be about 10 weeks or so, and we'll be back rolling again with Tiger Talk and football preseason programming on the Auburn Sports Network.
Feels like it needs to pump the brakes a little bit. Everybody's enjoying the time off, but at the same time, a whole lot of excitement continuing to build up for football season. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, we appreciate your time. We look forward to more talking season conversations with you coming up next week.
You got it. Pleasure, guys. War Eagle.
War Eagle. Brad Law, again, joining us every single Thursday at 2:30 here on ESPN 106.7. We'll take a break. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one with some exciting news at the high school level. One that affects one team a little bit more than the other here in town, but one that definitely affects Christian in third person as he sends himself to break. But really, really excited as there was news from Lee Scott Academy last night. Not necessarily the surprise, but a whole lot of excitement. We'll discuss that to end hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network for taking the time out of his day and joining us to talk a little bit of basketball, a little bit of football in there as well. You can tell truly talking season. A lot of the hypotheticals, a lot of the open-ended questions that bring up, again, great conversational points, and it's absolutely what we love being able to discuss. But appreciate his time here on this Thursday afternoon. And sending it to break, I mentioned there was news in terms of the high schools around here in Auburn, Alabama, and it's the Lee Scott Warriors. We mentioned the news of head coach Buster Daniel stepping down from his head coaching duties and taking a job within the AHSAA. Gave his congratulations, and rightfully so, for everything that he did at Valley, and again at Lee Scott Academy as well, the AISA state championships, and then the ability of moving to the from the AISA to the AHSAA and still having that level of success, just missing out on the playoffs in year one, getting into the playoffs and hosting the playoffs in year two. But following that, has stepped down and again is taking a job within the AHSAA. And so because of that, yesterday afternoon, very exciting news dropped for Lee Scott Academy. Almost the Wolf of Wall Street of something came across my desk today, John. Jacob Osment named the interim head coach for 2026 for Lee Scott Academy. And you want to talk about the best guy that you'll ever meet. You want to talk about a guy that loves the kids that he coaches and doesn't see coaching as a job, but as a passion, as a joy, as a love. This is Mr. Lee Scott Academy, Mr. Red, White, and Blue. He bleeds it, and you see that from the passion of which he coaches as the defensive coordinator for the last handful of years. Moving into the interim head coaching job, nothing official whatsoever, but according to the opinion of Christian Griffin, take the damn interim tag off because he's the best thing that will happen to Lee Scott Academy. But major congratulations. I know that there is so much excitement being able to talk with all of my Lee Scott families, everybody there at Lee Scott. There is a whole lot of excitement for not only the football season, but for Coach Osmond. It is more than deserved. I know that it's somebody that you will be able to meet here soon, Tripp, and be able to discuss because we will be able to have him on the program here within the next couple of days. I believe we're going to schedule him for Tuesday of next week. I believe that's getting confirmed. And so really excited to be able to dive into his knowledge and his passion and show you the reason why he was named the interim head coach for the 2026 season. But a whole lot of excitement coming out of Lee Scott Academy on Academy Drive with Jacob Osmond being named the interim head coach for Lee Scott Academy football.
Yeah, no, that's so exciting. I'm again, a lot of that has of what I've heard about Coach Osmond has come from you, and I trust your judgment when it comes to evaluating what goes on Academy Drive. So I am very excited to see what they've done, and they have had such a fantastic defense the past few years, last year specifically. And I, again, you always like it when they go someone in-house, and I'm sure the players were fired up
yes.
when the news came across their desk, as you said, or when they were able to hear in a meeting or something. So I'm excited to see what happens. I'm excited to see and hope that, again, I'm going to trust your judgment when it comes to Lee Scott football and how good he is. So we'll be excited to see that. In this next upcoming year.
Yeah, we've mentioned it before that men lie, women lie, but numbers do not lie. And this speaks for itself. This was on the press release that during the two championship seasons, the Warriors ranked near the top of the state regardless of the classification in defensive metrics, allowing only 71 points. Total points in 5.9 points per game allowed in the undefeated season in 2022. They ranked number one in defensive average in the state of Alabama, and they followed that up with only allowing 118 total points or 9.8 points per game in 2023, which was 13th defensive rating average in the state. And so I would say that those numbers speak for themselves of not only the talent of Coach Jacob Osmond, but again, there is so much that goes on behind the scenes. He's so involved in everything for Lee Scott Academy. And so a big time, major congratulations to Coach Osmond. Still need to get him out onto the golf course, and we need to have a full-on match between Auburn High and Lee Scott Academy. I like our odds now that Jacob Osmond is going to be the interim head coach, but need to get him out on the golf course. But a big-time congratulations to the 2026 interim head coach for Lee Scott Academy, Coach Jacob Osmond. Really, really cool to see, and brought a big-time smile. There's nobody more deserving when I saw that news yesterday.
Yep, fired up for him. Can't wait to meet him. Big things happening at Lee Scott Academy on the football side and all sports side of things, obviously, but the football side specifically.
Yeah, very, very much so, and more news that I don't know is completely public yet, and so nothing on that. But what we do know is that Jacob Osmond will be on the sidelines wearing the head coaching hat for 2026. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Hour number two has a lot of Auburn football conversation. The top 10 transfers in the SEC for the 2026 season. Also, some other news in terms of Auburn in the NBA draft and some news that started in the SEC and made its way to the NFL. We'll get Chris Gordy's thoughts on that. All of that here in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
The SEC has ranked its top 10 transfers for the 2026-2027 class, and Auburn has a couple of them.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on this Thursday afternoon. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. This is On the Line from 2 to 4 every single weekday from 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. We appreciate everybody for being here with us, for spending some time here on your Thursday afternoon, on your hot summer Thursday afternoon. My goodness, just walking outside, going to get in your truck, you start breaking a sweat, much less having to get in the truck and sit and wait 5 minutes for it to cool down. You break even more of a sweat. And so excited to be inside here this afternoon, and had a really, really fun hour number one. We had Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network join us, talking all things basketball with the SEC schedule being announced, or I guess not the overall schedule, but the SEC teams being announced for the Auburn Tigers and the remainder of the SEC. We'll be able to dive more into the other 15 teams in the Southeastern Conference as the days and the weeks go on. But we're able to give our opening thoughts for the Auburn basketball schedule, with the home and home, with the home games, and then the road slate, which is very, very difficult to be willing to put that within the conversation of the toughest road schedule in the SEC for Stephen Pearl in year two, but how that doesn't really change any of the expectations that are put on this Auburn team, and I don't think they would tell you otherwise. And so all of that was in hour number one. If you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out at our podcast center over at ESPNAU.com.
And we've got so much more planned for the second hour of the show. Chris Gordy of the Locked On SEC, he joins at 3:30 today. We'll talk everything going on with Oklahoma winning the College World Series. We'll talk about what's going on with Tarion Arnold, because that's such a big story right now. I know you were talking with Doug earlier on the Max Roundtable about that situation. I definitely would love to give my thoughts as a fan of the team he currently plays for. Eventually, a little bit later, we'll talk a little bit about what's going on in the NBA. Some former Tigers picked up and signed on some two-way contracts or G League contracts that Auburn fans know very well, as well as some good stuff with whatever just happened in Charlotte with LaMelo Ball trade there. But first, we'll talk a little bit into the top 10 transfers, kind of going back to the article we were talking about yesterday, looking at some players that Auburn has that are listed among the best in the Southeastern Conference at the transfer portal position. But if you want to be a part of the show, the next 30 minutes, phone lines are wide open, 334-321-1390. Give us a call, or you can text in the text box, which I guess is always open, 334-784-1685, 334-784-1OTL. If you have something that you want us to react to, a question for us to talk about, maybe even a question for Chris Gordy if you have one, because always, you know, your questions and your comments and your concerns are very, very appreciated in the text box. And Christian, looking at these top 10 transfers, Auburn's name peppers the list a little bit. Some Tigers getting some representation.
Yeah, they definitely are. And I have not spent the entire time you were talking trying to find it. But here we go. I did, in fact, find the link
that's on the rundown that you could scroll
down to? I do see the link. I have just scrolled past it multiple times. Again, this is the giant article that we really dissected yesterday of the 2026 SEC, the college football preview, the predictions, and then again the top transfers with Bill Connolly, and yesterday broke down a lot of what the SP Plus ideologies look like and the predictions look like, with the SP Plus being points per play, points per drive, yards per play, the amount of times that you score, the field goals you kick, the touchdowns you score, everything on that side of things. Where on the offense, you want a very high SP plus. Defensively, you want a very low SP plus, because you don't want to give up points. You want to force three and outs. You want to force punch. You want to get turnovers, get takeaways. And so those two things complement each other the best that they can. And looking at Auburn, they are the 12th of 16 teams in score according to Nope, that's the 2025. Gosh dang it, I did it again. That's unfortunate. Auburn is the 26th team in the country. No, they are still 12th. It was 2025 and 2026 that they were the 12th, with the 55th ranked offensive SP Plus and the 18th ranked SP Plus. I promise I'll get there eventually.
Eventually,
eventually I'll get there. As is your airplane hangar,
literally with as I
with your computer that I heard through the headset. But
right.
Do want to dive into eventually the top 10 favorite transfers according to Bill Connolly, and you mentioned that Auburn has a couple of names that are without that are spread throughout this list. Rasheem Biles is the first one that he mentions from Texas after losing a couple of the guys that that they had, with Anthony Hill being the primary linebacker that they lost. They mentions Raelique Brown and Hollywood Smothers, also from Texas. One other wide receiver that is now attending Texas. Jordan Seaton, LSU, the offensive lineman. Sam Levitz, the LSU quarterback. Jace Brown, a wide receiver from LSU that was at Kansas State last year. Robert Woodyard Jr., you know that name as well. But a couple of big-time names for the Auburn Tigers, and the first one is Byron Brown. He says, quote, "I'm really high on the South Florida transfer who has followed his head coach to the Plains after racking up 3,100 passing yards, 1,100 non-sack rushing yards, and 42 total touchdowns last season." They also mention defensive tackle Cody Sigler in there as well, talking about a big-time playmaker. He had 8 tackles for loss and 5 sacks, and also broke up 5 passes last year as well. 302 pounds from Arkansas State. He says that he thinks that that is going to very easily translate into the world of the SEC. And so excitement just on that side of things when looking at having Auburn's name in a couple of the top transfers throughout the SEC.
100%. And I think looking at these transfers that they're named with, that's a very high ceiling to have. I really am high on guys like Jace Brown, who was, even with a very run-heavy offense at Kansas State, a standout, and still was able to be a receiver that could take the top off of a defense and play so well. And so they bring him in at LSU, pairing him with Sam Levitt, a guy that I don't know if I don't have an opinion on Sam Levitt yet. I think he's can be good, can be bad. Looking at what Arizona State was without him, probably means he's pretty good, but we'll have to see. Jordan Seaton as well is a good one. I remember he committed like live on First Take back in the day to Colorado, and when, you know, Coach Prime was the hottest thing on the recruiting trail, and we see how that ended up. So now he's at LSU. But looking at what Auburn brings to the table, obviously Byron Brown has to start and end the list when it comes to SEC transfer quarterbacks. He was electric at his time in South Florida. He was able to, again, they have it on here, just over 3,000 passing yards, 1,100 non-sack rushing yards, and 42 total touchdowns. That is dynamic. I mean, anytime you could see a player on offense that is not a running back with 1,000 rushing yards probably means that they are a key part of an offense. So that's really big on Byron Brown. And then again, you said it, Cody Sigler also on there. Yeah, 5 pass breakups is crazy. I want to say, and I could be totally wrong, but I think back in, I don't know if it was 25 or 26 in the EA college football, I did a dynasty with Arkansas State, and I want to say he was pretty good on that team at defensive tackle. I want to say that. I'm going to have to go look and fact check myself, because I know I did an Arkansas State one. I got to remember if Cody was on there, because I remember we had some insane defensive linemen with the Red Wolves up in Jonesboro, Arkansas, I believe. But yeah, so this is a big list of big talent, and Auburn, rightfully so, has 2 transfers on it, and it could probably have more if you were to expand this list to 20 or 25.
Yeah, definitely so. When looking, according to 24/7 Sports, looking at the 2026 transfer football team rankings, I don't think that there's any surprise that the Tigers of LSU were the top team. They had 41 commits from the transfer portal. 3 of them were 5 stars, wow. 14 of them 4 stars, 23 three stars, and they had 81.92 points just according to the transfer rankings with the stars and everything on that side of things. The next closest was Ole Miss, who was 20 points below the LSU Tigers, which shows the excitement that is building, but also the pressure for Lane Kiffin in year one in Baton Rouge, because after a portal class like that and the amount of dollars and the amount of commas that were spent on this roster, which it's 2026 and that still doesn't feel right to publicly and openly say and almost applaud. Oh yeah, congratulations. They had the biggest war chest. Nice work. But you are the furthest thing from a first-year head coach rebuild in Baton Rouge. You almost feel like you're the same way at Ole Miss as well, but I think the expectations have changed a little bit. It'll be very interesting to see if it was Lane Kiffin that carried Ole Miss or if it was everybody else that carried Ole Miss. Ole Miss with 29 commits, 12 of them were 4 stars, 17 of them were 3 stars. Texas at number 3, Penn State, I don't think that's a surprise, at number 4, Miami at number 5, Texas Tech number 6. Who's that 5-star? Let's click on number 6, Texas Tech. The top ones.
Brendan Sorsby. Who was?
Correct. Was. Yeah. So sorry. Yeah. I actually clicked on that halfway jokingly because obviously, yes, Brendan Sorsby was the 5-star transfer. I forgot Malcolm Simmons transferred to Texas Tech.
It is June 25th, 2026 at 3:13 p.m. That is the first time I have heard that Malcolm Simmons.
Really?
I did not realize that. Perry Thompson was at Minnesota, and I knew...
Where?
The University of Minnesota, the Golden Gophers.
Dang it.
Oh, Minnesota! Yes, yes. Okay, gotcha. I snatched that. Okay, I got you. Yeah, I didn't know you wanted me to make a reference there. But yes, have him and then Cam Coleman at Texas. But no, I did not realize Malcolm Simmons was at Texas Tech. Goodness.
Yeah, a 4-star when he was listed in the transfer portal. Yeah,
He was pretty good. I know he had some interesting comments to say about Auburn on his way out.
Yeah, but very, very much so.
We'll see how Will Hammond does with him.
Yes.
I think you are right wanting to talk about some of these transfer portals. You were going to get to Auburn eventually. Some guys that could also be considered as well. I mean, Deshaun Womack, if he is available to play, he is a guy that will be a good edge defender. I'm really high on a guy, you know, Cole Best in the offensive line will be really good. And then a lot of the wide receivers that transferred over from USF, I mean, Nakai Davenport, Christian Neptune, Coy Pettigrew, Keyshawn Singleton obviously is kind of the guy that headlines that group, Chaz Nimrod. Those are going to be players that I think if you were to re-rank who were the most impactful transfers in the SEC, those will be names that come up because they're going to be the vast majority of the receiving yards as well. Looking at the running backs, obviously Bryson Washington, a big pickup there. Nakai Davenport, a running back. I listed him under wide receiver, but he is a USF transfer as well. And that's going to be great to watch as well.
Yeah, it definitely is. And
I forgot Jake Johnson.
Trying
was
to find
also
one more. Tay Meadows was the guy that I couldn't remember. The Troy leading rusher from last year that again is being brought into a room that is very, very deep. And I do want to spend a little bit of time, not as much today, but probably next week and again further on into the summer, diving into every single position group. Yes, but the wide receiver room especially, because obviously with the news of Duke Smith, and which we didn't necessarily get to, there weren't any big time details released other than the violation of team rules, but unfortunate on that side of things because I know he had a good spring and had a good A-day as well. But you talk about the depth of that receiver room. By no means am I condoning this by any means or making this seem a little bit lighter than it needs to be, but if there is a position group that you feel like is deep enough to lose a depth piece like that, it might be the receiver room,
right?
Just because of the guys like Bryce Kane that are remaining as an Auburn Tiger, Sam Turner, who I am very, very excited yes. about. There is a lot of hype with him coming out of high school and just seeing the talent. I hope that he can work his way onto the field and be a big factor. But then that goes without even mentioning all of the transfers that came from that South Florida offense, highlighted by Keyshawn Singleton. But then you mentioned Jeremiah Koger, who is a much bigger receiver than I think many people, including myself, realized at 6'3", 209. You continue with Chaz Nimrod, who's 6'2", 198. And then the one more that I'm really looking for, trying to find the exact name. I'll get there eventually. Christian Neptune, there he is, 5'11", 190. Had a really good bowl game, and I feel like that brought a lot of excitement for what he was going to bring for the Auburn Tigers. But the wide receiver room has a whole lot of depth. You also bring in a guy like Scrap Richardson, who's the wide receiver slash cornerback slash special teams type of guy. And so the wide receiver unit is going to continue to be a question mark, but I think that, again, as we've said the entire summer, having a question mark in the wide receiver room is a very good thing, because it's not the pressure of making sure that one or two guys make sure that they get their targets, make sure that they get their receptions. It's very much a receiver room by committee, which is a good problem.
Yeah, and especially when a lot of those guys have experience with your quarterback. If it was a bunch of players like that have been brought from different organizations and had brought with different offensive philosophies and coaching that are all being combined into one group, then it would, I'd be a lot more concerned. But it's guys that have experience, and we didn't even mention any of the true freshmen. Deshaun Spencer, who had a fantastic A-Day coming out of Saraland, yeah. Brian Williams as well, and then, of course, one of the star recruits of this class, Brady Marchese from Cartersville, my dear friend. That he's going to be a instant impact player, in my opinion. He will, the second he sees the ball, he will not let go of that spot. So having him as well in development and a guy that you can turn to early will also be fantastic. And it will be a group that, again, there are question marks, but it's question marks what you look like in an Auburn Tiger jersey and not question marks at what you look like at the collegiate level.
Looking at this list, I'm going to say this without context because there doesn't need to be context, but looking at the guys that transferred in and transferred out of the Auburn Tigers, gosh, I can't believe he's as high as he is. Xavier Chaplin.
Right.
Where was the other ones that I was wanting to mention? Broderick Scholl, Damari Alston, Hollis Davidson, Jackson Arnold, Preston Howard, Tyler Johnson. Without context, I'm just going to name those names. We talked about the guys coming in, and, you know, just Jackson Arnold, again, I think I mentioned that. But, you know, without context, I'll just name those guys that might make Auburn fans smile just a little bit more here on this Thursday afternoon. We'll head to break here for the first time in hour number two. Come back with some NBA draft news. Also a question from the text box. Right-hand salute, President Eric wants to know some information. So we're going to give him some dang information. We'll hit on that when we come back and again talk about some NBA news for some previous Auburn Tigers that have made their way to the next level. All of that before Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, joins us at 3:30.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
Back here inside the ESPN 106.7 studio, he's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for spending some time with us here this afternoon. We have Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, joining us here in just a few moments. But while we do have a little bit of time, Sticking on the football conversation for just a moment before we hit on the basketball side of things, we got a text from the On the Line Breakers in the text box at 334-784-1685. And yes, you can right-hand salute. President Eric wants to know, do you guys think that we will rotate these receivers in, or will there be more of a top three or four guys that get a majority, if not all of the work? He says he's wondering and almost worried if there will be enough snaps for all of the wide receivers. And I think it's a fantastic question. A, it's a great problem to have. Obviously, it's more difficult in terms of keeping depth nowadays, right? But I think with the classification, I think that it helps a little bit because there are some of the seniors, and then there's a lot of the younger guys as well, like Chaz Nimrod is a senior. You have Keyshawn Singleton, who's a junior, who you would imagine would see a lot of snaps on the field. Keyshawn Singleton will see snaps on the field. I think that is no questions the number one go-to guy for Byron Brown as of right now. But again, Chaz Nimrod, Jeremiah Koger in that conversation, Christian Neptune in that conversation. You mentioned Brady Marchese, Sam Turner, all of these guys that are going to have to fight for their spots. Deshaun Spencer, from what I've heard, is going to see a lot of snaps, and rightfully so, from what we saw at A-Day, if that can continue to work out. I got to ask him during or after the A-Day game, what does he want to continue to work on over the break? And he said putting on some weight, getting a little bit stronger. And so being that slot receiver, but if you can, again, put muscle on and get a little bit stronger, get a little bit bigger, and work your way to where, again, you're a slot receiver that Byron Brown could go to at any point. I feel like brings a whole lot of excitement just bringing him, get him the football, get out in space. You feel like that's the same way for Neptune. You feel like that's the same way for Bryce Kane. But all of that wrapping up, at least in my opinion, I would imagine there is a one with Keyshawn Singleton. I think there's going to be a little bit of like a 2A, 2B, 2A, 2C. And I think you're fortunate enough with Baylor, yes, but then the two games, or I guess the game of Southern Miss, to kind of figure that out. And you would imagine summer camp will figure some of those things out. Spring camp, you made a generic depth chart. If you're Cody Burns, if you're Alex Golish, on what that receiver class wanted to look like or the group wanted to look like. But a fantastic problem to have. But I would imagine that by the time you get halfway through the season, it will be a little bit more of a 5-6 guys that are going to see a majority of the snaps.
Right. No, I definitely agree with you. I think that it'll be, especially early on, a rotation under the kind of the 3 and the 4, and again, a 5 wide, if even possible, that you're going to that. That's going to be the big thing to watch out for. I think that and the running back room, to me, are the two positions where you have a clear 1 and 2, and then everyone else is kind of competing for snaps. And again, competition, iron sharpens iron, is great, but I'm very curious, though. You say, like, in the era of roster retention, with the new 5-for-5 rule, could a lot of these guys, again, you have 5 years now, and it'll be interesting to see how roster construction changes. Could we see guys say, like, okay, hey, I know you're a senior, you're actually going to have another year, kind of what, you know, we talked about yesterday about Byron Brown. Mm-hmm. That also applies to that wide receiver room as well. I'd be very interested to see, with this new first freshman class being the first ever just 5-for-5, not having kind of a depends on what suits you better.
Right.
That'll be really interesting.
That, and not that coaches really worry about this anymore because the red shirt has kind of gone out the window, but I mean, a decade ago, it was very much like, okay, you're going to get on campus, but you're not really going to play as a freshman. It was, holy cow, look at this impact that this guy is making as a wide receiver 3 or a running back 2 as a freshman. And that was why the money Johnny Manziels of the world made such a big impact, because he was a freshman that was able to play legitimate minutes and be a star in the league. You don't see the red shirts anymore, so you don't have any sort of thing in the back of your head of, okay, well, we don't want this guy to play 4 games, because if he does, then he's not going to be able to redshirt anymore. Redshirting doesn't really matter, and so you're going to be able to use every single guy whenever you want. And looking at more guys that are going to be pass catchers, you have guys like Jonathan Echols, the 6'6 tight end that was a big-time goal line threat.
Tight ends are allowed to catch the ball?
They are. They can, in fact,
really?
Run routes and catch the football. And even cooler than that, they can run routes that are not just running straight up the hash marks.
Huh.
Yeah.
Man, that's That's not right.
It's pretty cool.
We should go back to the goal line fade every single play.
How cool is this? This is the first time I've seen a lot of these numbers. Jonathan Echols, again, the 6'6", 240-pound tight end from IMG and then USF, who was the main goal line threat for Alex Golish and Byron Brown. Where's number one?
Ooh.
That's really cool to see. Yeah. That is awesome. Xavier Newsom also in there from Howard, the tight end, the 6'6", 265-pound tight end. And then Jake Johnson from Oconee and from North Carolina, the senior, kind of the leader of that group. And so really excited to see, but big-time questions in terms of who's going to catch the ball, but we know there's a plethora of them. We'll take a break. We'll get with Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC podcast, when we come back.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Thirty more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us and taking some time to join us on your Thursday afternoon. And with it being Thursday at 3:30, we welcome in our guy, Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, the longest tenured guest that we have had here on the show. Appreciate your time, as always. Hope all is well. Hopefully not as hot here or there as it is here, but I have a feeling that that's beg to differ as the summer is very much on us.
Oh, it's hot everywhere. I'm going to be at the Manning Passing Academy tomorrow, and it is a yearly tradition. I have to change clothes after I get done there because I just sweat through every ounce of clothing that I have. It is like, I mean, there's hot, and then there's Thibodeau, Louisiana hot in the middle of the summer. I mean, I don't know why, like the Mannings, they could go to Indianapolis or something. I don't know why they do this thing down at Nichols. But it's always a fun event and always brings out a lot of the big names.
Yeah, I mean, find a dome somewhere. Find somewhere with a little bit of air conditioning to help everybody out, right?
Yeah, it's like it's insane. Like I remember, I think it was last year, walking across the fields because they have a million fields with all these campers and camp counselors, and it's an awesome event. It's just hotter than literally the devil would be sweating out of this thing.
Chris Gordy says it best here on ESPN 106.7. Before we dive into everything, I may be setting myself up for failure with this question and very, very much off topic, but something that Tripp and I have discussed, being the baseball and the football nerds, have you played 82-0 or 162-0 where you build the perfect team, the perfect baseball team, the perfect football team, or perfect basketball team?
I've done the NBA one a lot. I tried the college football. It was a little too much for me. So it's cool. It's a good time waster. But like after spending 20 minutes doing that, I looked up and said, "What am I doing with my life?" So yeah, it's a good time waster if you need one of those.
Very, very much so. Yeah, you feel like you could easily burn an hour trying to create a baseball team to go 162-0. Well, baseball is where we start our conversation here with you this afternoon, as I know that it has made you a little bit happier to be able to talk about the Oklahoma Sooners as national champions rather than national runner-ups. They demolished North Carolina in Game 3 of the winner-take-all series, a team that finished 14-16 in conference play. There were all of four people talking about Oklahoma making a run, and all four of those people resided in Norman, Oklahoma, especially after where you saw that they were seeded. But going to Georgia Tech, going to Omaha, pulling the upset twice over Georgia, who was a favorite to win the whole thing, and then pulling the upset over North Carolina, who was more than favored to win the whole thing. Your thoughts from all of Omaha and then Oklahoma winning the whole thing.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look, but that's got to be one of the toughest roads to win a College World Series as far as just opponents and having to go on the road for a regional and super regional. Like, I'd have to go back and look at the teams that have won it all.
I believe statistically it is. In the 27 years of the new new format, it is the toughest road to a championship.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, it just was. I mean, you talk about getting battle tested. I had them losing to Georgia Tech in Atlanta. So, I mean, you know, it's crazy that they made it as far as they did. But we always talk about it. I mean, it was like Ole Miss a few years ago in Omaha. You get hot at the right time, anything could happen. And, you know, I think that's what's crazy is when you look around and say this is the seventh straight, you know, championship for the SEC winning the College World Series in the sixth different team. You know, LSU won it twice, but – it seems like everybody else is taking a turn. And our guy Jimmy Stein, who does Locked On Bama, brought up, because, man, it's crazy to think that. And it's also crazy to think that next year some of the favorites are going to be Georgia, Texas, Florida, mm-hmm. Auburn. I'll put them in the mix. I mean, it's teams that have not, won in this stretch here, but you could literally make an argument for just about any of those other SEC teams to win it all next year. So, yeah, I hope this tradition continues on. I hope we have different SEC teams winning it. I just think, you want to talk about conference dominance. It's one thing when Alabama was winning all those championships in football and we were all kind of looking around going, SEC, SEC, I guess. I mean, it's all Bama. But here in Omaha, it's just been fun to see all these different SEC teams taking their turns. And the crazy part, too, is if Arkansas could get that damn fly ball in pop out in foul territory, they win it. We're talking about nine.
We're talking about nine. Yep. I was literally about to say thanks, Arkansas, for dropping a foul ball down the first baseline and letting freaking Oregon State win it. But
and that would be eight different teams because Florida won it.
Yeah, 17. They won in 17.
It would have been Florida, Arkansas, Vandy. I mean, the list goes on, and it's super impressive. And tell LSU and Jay Johnson, hey, pipe down for a little bit. We don't need you guys winning the third one.
And then, why not make it eight in a row, as you mentioned, the Auburn Tigers? Once they decide to get out of the Super Regional, they're in the prime spot, right? So we'll easily call it that way. Any big transfer portal news? I know that the college baseball transfer portal is open, and I've seen some names bounced around from SEC team to SEC team. Any big-time names that need to be highlighted that you've been able to cover?
Nothing huge. I mean, I know the big one was last week. LSU got the kid that was number one in the portal, the Notre Dame outfielder that's supposed to be, one of the best hitters out there. But it's funny. I follow everybody on social media, and it's like, Kentucky celebrates like we got him, and it's like an outfielder from Santa Clara, and it's like you don't know if these guys are any good. I mean, LSU was throwing a party last year because they got all these big time. Transfers, a big bopper from Grand Canyon and a second baseman from Kansas State, and all these guys did well elsewhere, and then they all came in and they flopped at LSU. So you never know until they get out there. But I guess for every one of those, there's a Paul Skeens or a Tommy White that come in and absolutely embrace the spotlight and become absolute studs. So, just put it out there, whatever fan of a team you are, whether it's Auburn or Arkansas, whoever, you're going to be celebrating, dude, we got this pitcher from such and such. You don't know if that guy's going to be any good. We won't know until the season gets here.
Chris Gordy of the Locked On SEC podcast. Chris, switching gears over now to the hardwood with the Southeastern Conference announcing the college basketball matchups for the Tigers as well as the rest of the SEC. And something that we've talked about a ton today is this road slate heading to Fayetteville, Arkansas, Lexington, Kentucky, College Station, Texas, Austin, Texas, Nashville, and Columbia, South Carolina. Talk to me about some of those matchups and if you see any that could be an under-the-radar upset for Auburn or something that could be a big game.
Well, the Columbia one, at least I'll give you that one's easy. But I mean,
breath.
It's crazy that everybody in the SEC is good, and it's tough environment. So I mean, there's not going to be any that, like, I did a show the other day, and they're like, who's got the easiest path? I'm like, everybody's road is tough. I mean, even like we were talking about Kentucky. Kentucky gets a lot of their tougher teams at home this year. But I'm like, even still, it's like, even at home, you're going to be favored, but it still doesn't make it easy that you got to go up against Arkansas and Tennessee and Florida and, all these teams. So it's like, look, I expect the SEC is going to be just as good in basketball next year. I think it'll harken back to the year 2 years ago when we had, a record number of SEC teams make the tournament. I just think we have so much star power from guys coming back. I'm fascinated to see what Steven Pearl and Auburn do with him, finally being able to build a roster, how he wants it. And, I was looking at the recruiting rankings. I mean, Arkansas is right up there. Tennessee's right up there. We know Texas killed it in the transfer portal. I mean, it's going to be a tough SEC schedule once again in college basketball. The thing is, you just hope at the end of the day you're one of those teams in the top five or six.
Hey, and for us, we made the joke today of we're excited to be hopeful to not be driven by basketball conversations in October. If we can get to that point and still kind of delay our basketball talks, then we're in really good spots because of what Alex Golish and what the Tigers are doing on the football field, continuing to hit recruiting really well. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, here with us, and a very simple YouTube search of Locked On SEC. You can click on his podcast, and there are a couple ones that I feel like Auburn fans would want to look at, a couple on in terms of the toughest environments, in terms of maybe a couple of dark horses, but want to start with the one most recently about the 5 for 5. We just had a conversation essentially ending the conversation of red shirts. Want your overall thoughts on the pros, on the cons, and everything in between in terms of what the 5 for 5 is going to look like starting this year for college football and college athletics in general.
Yeah, in one sense, it's weird we're giving everybody an extra year no matter what. I mean, it's going to be like my first thing went to, what if you're a player who's not good enough for the NFL, but you're just a really good college player, and you have the incentive of NIL to stay in school that fifth extra year and play? It's going to be really interesting to see. And look, I mean, most guys, if you're a stud pro, you're going to go pro and you're not going to hang around all 5 years. But I'm thinking like Jason White, the old Oklahoma quarterback back in the day. Nobody was saying he was going to be an NFL player. Mm-hmm. If you want to go Tommy Frazier, I mean, there's a bunch of guys like that that, you know, I just look at and say, man, it would have been really interesting to see those guys get an extra year. And then you're talking about school records and NCAA records being broken, because if you play as a true freshman, you hang around 5 years, you're going to become the all-time leading scorer in school history and all this other stuff. So that was my initial thought. The other part is, man, everybody's on board with it now. They say they are until the injuries start to happen. And then you have a guy who tears an ACL and goes, man, I should get a medical redshirt. No, medical redshirt doesn't exist anymore. That's not a thing. You get your 5 years and that's it. I think it's going to end up, you know, messing over some pretty big name guys that we go, oh, why is he out of eligibility? I wish he had another year. You know, and again, I think they're trying to be fair and say, we're not giving you 4, we're giving you 5 now. But I don't know. We like it now until I think there are going to be problems that arise down the road. And, you know, I get the gist of it. You don't want 25 and 26-year-olds playing college sports, but it's going to get real sticky if you get into territories with a guy who's been injured several times and, you know, is a great player by his fifth year and has a big NIL deal that, you know, I could see them getting a lawyer and trying to go fight for another year of eligibility.
Chris Gordy of the Locked On SEC podcast. Speaking of like football related with this 5v5 is the quarterback position, where you see this 1 year like rental transfer portal quarterbacks that could get another year of eligibility. I mean, we talked about Byron Brown being a example of one that, because he's going to play this year, he will get another year of eligibility, we believe. And so that could be interesting to see kind of where that affects quarterback competitions for every single program in the country. Do you suspect a trend like that to continue this year?
Well, at least as I understood it, they were trying to say that the guys that, you know, if you're a senior this year, that this is it, like that you've capped off your eligibility. And so it sounded like they were trying to push that narrative that if you're going into the spring or coming out of the spring, if you were a senior, that's it, you're done with eligibility. And I know that, you know, there were already some lawyers trying to get lawsuits going to get guys, you know, hey, we need to go to court and get these guys eligible. Yeah, another year. But
is it Pavia's lawyer that has like 50 guys already slated to his name?
Well, the guys I saw are mostly basketball players, and it wasn't even SEC guys. It was all, you know, guys who play in all the big basketball conferences and stuff like that. So we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, it is a fascinating thing, and Byron Brown might fit that category of a guy that, you know, maybe the pros aren't knocking on his door saying, oh my God, can't wait to get you to the NFL, that maybe, you know, could make sense if he does get it, you know, if he does end up having an extra year of eligibility to stay in school. So, it's just going to be very interesting to see how this all plays out. I think we all have a million questions with it. I understand why they're trying to do this. And there was a win in the sport today with, the NCAA getting a ruling in their favor from a court saying, you know, the SCS or whatever, the CSC, the thing that's basically judging if NIL deals are legit or not, the courts rule, you know, sided with them. And I think for the most part, they are doing a good job. And the head of the group has even come out and said, dude, we're not trying to mess over kids. We're just trying to make sure these deals are legit.
Yeah.
And I think we all agree, nobody wants to see these, you know, dumb kids getting $8 million in NIL because their rich booster is the CEO of a tech corporation. That's not what NIL and all this was supposed to be. I'm fine with them making money, but, like, let's keep it within reason of realistic deals. And instead of schools outbidding schools, then all you're proving is who has the most money and not about who has the best football team.
Yeah, just a big flex chain of, it's pay for play right now in college football. But a lot of that comes with the transfer portal, but also the recruiting side of things as well. And if you'll be the LeBron James to my Dwayne Wade, throwing you the lob in terms of another show that you did yesterday, I believe, that I was able to catch most of, talking about panic time over on the school on the other side of our state with Alabama and the recruiting side of things. Not something that we have dived into too much just because we understand the month of June, but maybe a different take from Mr. Chris Gordy, as you say that with Alabama being dead last, it may be a little bit of time to panic.
Yeah, it's very concerning if you're the Crimson Tide, and they're all trying to poo-poo it away. I mean, I've seen a few Alabama fans go, oh, no, we got so much roster retention for next year. We're worried about paying our guys to bring them back. We're not worried about recruiting. It's like, well, let me just tell you, Alabama's recruiting has ranked top three every year since 2008. And most of those years, they were either the number one or number two recruiting class. Even with DeBoer, the 2 years he's been there, they've been top three, top four. And now you're going to tell me that suddenly you got a class ranked in the 60s and that's acceptable? The other ones have tried to tell me, oh, it's early. Well, yeah, it's early, but why is every other school outpacing you right now with recruiting? I mean, it's, you know, and it goes back to, there was a quote last week from Kalen DeBoer saying, yeah, we still have a long way to go with raising NIL money and all that. I'm going, well, brother, you better start raising that money now. We're about to go into July, and go look at the Rivals and the On3 and 24/7 recruiting rankings. Much of the 150 top kids have all picked their schools already. So unless you're going to come in the midnight hour and start flipping, you know, 6 or 7 4 and 5 stars, Bama's class ain't going to be that good. And so, you know, again, everybody's going to make excuses for them and all this, but I think the reality is this dynasty died when Nick Saban left. It was dying in his last couple of years there. And Kalen DeBoer is just a really good coach at a program that's a really good program, but it's not the elite dynasty that it once was. And we'll see what happens with Alabama. The craziest part about their class, guys, is their two highest prospects, the 4-star and a 5-star, are both quarterbacks.
Both quarterbacks, yep. Yeah.
Well, last I checked, Keelan Russell is going to be back next year. So, like, okay, where's his O-line? Where's his weapons? Where's where are the guys to protect him? Like, that's what I'd be way concerned about if I'm a Bama fan.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, dropping the boom here on our way out here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. For those that haven't checked it out quite yet, tell everybody where they need to go so they can keep up with all of your daily coverage.
Yeah, just Locked On SEC wherever you get your podcast. And, great episode today. Brad Crawford from CBS Sports joined us and talked a number of SEC topics, so check it out.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate your time and joining us again every single week here at this 3:30 slot. We look forward to more open-ended questions of the true talking season coming up before we get to see you in Tampa here in just a couple of weeks.
Awesome. Thanks, fellas.
Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC podcast, bringing some smiles to the Auburn fans to wrap up the show here today.
Yeah, I mean, it is something. Yeah, when you are getting outpaced by programs like Cincinnati and Nebraska, which, you know, this isn't 90s Nebraska, this is modern Nebraska, and you know, there are just a hair under 70 P4 programs, and you're telling me Alabama is recruiting in the 60s. If we do the math right there, that's not very good at all.
If we do the math, it turns out that that's not really where you want to be. Clip it. Put it on a t-shirt. Love it. We'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up the Thursday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Hours 4 and 5 of your 7 straight hours of sports talk coverage from the Max Roundtable to us with On the Line and then Bill Cameron And I believe Justin Ferguson about to walk into the studio to take you home here this afternoon. But a fantastic show for us here on our end. Appreciate Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network for joining us at 2:30. For Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, for joining us at 3:30. And tomorrow's show looks like a whole lot of fun. Yes. We've talked a lot about the recruiting side of things. We have an expert making his way into the studio, our good buddy Christian Clemente with 24/7 and Auburn Undercover, to join us and talk all about what Alex Golish is doing. He will be joining us from 2 to 3. And then our good buddy Jack Hudden will be taking us home, joining us from 3 to 4, discussing a text box question from President Eric on, if you had 3 years to build a championship-level program, how would you do it? Would you do it through the portal? Would you do it with five-star talent out wide? Would you do it with offensive and defensive linemen? Or would you do it through a quarterback and trying to basically have year one, year two, year three to continue to build? And so should be a whole lot of fun on tomorrow's show.
Yeah, you can't miss a Thursday here and On the Line, because it's been a fantastic show. It's always a great day on Thursday hearing from Brad and Chris. And you sure can't miss a free-for-all Friday tomorrow. It will be an absolute time. So make sure 2 to 4, you're planted right where you are right now, or wherever you need to be listening to On the Line.
Yep, 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. And sports are so much better with an opinion. We gave a lot of them here this afternoon. And whether you love them, whether you hate them, we're back tomorrow to tell you more about them. And we hope that you'll be here to join us.
This is Tyler with GutterPro. At GutterPro, we believe spring is all about.